Shh. We're going to try to listen. We're going to try to really listen, that active, mindful listening to all that is not us or us made. On the next Mind's Eye Radio, Listening to Nature, or Shh, Darlings, Mother is Talking. That's Mind's Eye Radio. It's radio within reach. The Snowman. One must have a mind of winter to regard the frost and the boughs of the pine trees crusted with snow, and have been cold a long time to behold the junipers shagged with ice, the spruces rough in the distant glitter of the January sun, and not to think of any misery in the sound of the wind, in the sound of a few leaves, which is the sound of the land, full of the same wind that is blowing in the same bare place, for the listener who listens in the snow, and nothing himself beholds nothing that is not there, and the nothing that is. Wallace Stevens, The Snowman, from the collection Harmonium, 1923. It's hard enough to hear the people and the sounds around us so loud and distracting, never mind the more subtle sounds of much of nature. Iowans swear that on hot summer nights one can incline one's head toward the back 40 and hear the crackling and rustling of new corn shoots breaking out of the ground, off of the stalk. Today, we're all going to take on the Iowan frame of mind. We're going to really try to listen, that active, mindful listening to all that is not us or us made, in Listening to Nature. Speaking of scientists, we are paid a rare and much coveted visit by our own good doctor, Dr. Stringlove, a.k.a. Lewis Rawl.
Hello, Dr. Stringlove here. I can't get back into the lab until the repairs are finished. No one was hurt and insurance covers the damage, but they've sent me away to the radio telescope. It is mainly outdoors. Instead of the sounds of nature out there, I'm in the control room listening to the cosmic background radiation on 4.08 gigahertz or 4,080 megahertz. By comparison, most of you are listening to me on 89.9 megahertz, which is about 5.5 octaves lower in frequency. This nondescript noise is what's left of the blast, if you will, of the universe exploding into existence. Of course, you need a radio to convert electromagnetic radiation into something we can hear. Putting this aside, who heard what and when? There might not be anyone around when a tree falls in the woods, but maybe a reverberation can be picked up later. The story starts in 1960, in the days of Ma Bell and a communication satellite called Echo. This was just a huge metallized Mylar balloon, off which radio signals were bounced. These came back very weakly, so a really good receiver was needed. A.B. Crawford built one for Bell Labs in Homedale, New Jersey. After the short and non-illustrious career of Echo, the receiver sat around unused for a while, and then was turned over to Arno Penzias and Robert W. Wilson in 1964 to use for pure research into radio astronomy. Their first problem was to account for the background noise which interferes with all radio reception. Their antenna was horn-shaped to minimize reception from directions other than wanted. Some static is called by thermal radiation, that is, by heat. Heat is motion, and moving electrical charges emit radiation. Penzias and Wilson began in a workmanlike way to account for all internal and external background radiation. To make it quiet, the receiver was cooled to 4 degrees Kelvin, that is, 4 degrees Celsius above absolute zero. They summed up the radiation from it, the antenna, the atmosphere, other terrestrial sources, but still a mysterious signal remained. Another thing they heard from the antenna was a pair of pigeons using it as a home and a toilet. The pigeons were caged and shipped from Homedale to Whippany, New Jersey. Being homing pigeons, they were back in a couple of days, but by that time their, shall we say, contribution to the signal had also been removed. What was left was heard in every direction all year round and came from outside the Earth. It corresponded to a temperature of 3.5 degrees Kelvin. Once the cosmologists learned about this, they said, "Aha! The universe had a temperature of 10 billion degrees 1 second after the Big Bang of creation, and now 15 billion or so years later, it's cooled down to 3.5 degrees by expansion." A smoking gun for the Big Bang theory indeed, and a Nobel Prize as well for Penzias and Wilson, you might say, for listening to the radio. As usual, it's not what you do, but how you do it. Everyone seems to want a creation story. A local Native American one asserts that the human race was created near Green Bay, Wisconsin. Cosmology tells a story based on facts, not faith. However, in spite of the best current knowledge, things could turn out to be different. For example, the 15 or so billion year age of the universe is based on the way we measure time now. If one could move backward in time toward the Big Bang, maybe the actual time required to get there would be infinite. But that is pure speculation. This is Dr. Stringlove saluting radio listeners Penzias, Wilson, and everyone tuned in to Mind's Eye Radio.
George Eliot noted the following in her novel Middlemarch. If we had a keen vision and feeling of all ordinary life, it would be like hearing the grass grow or the squirrel's heartbeat, and we should die of that roar that lies on the other side of silence. Poet Josephine Zell celebrates that roar in Colored for a Season.
There is a time in October when suburban trees hang like globes of ochre or orange, paper lanterns of liquid light. This road is a runway of dresses for fall. Exotic creations, who would wear them? Ballooning in bronze and rotund russet, the radiant personae come striding toward me, my drab garb shamed. And in the distance, like waters cascading, the trees advance. I fill my memory with aqueous color and wordless beauty. Although tomorrow may be lovely, it will not be the same. The leaves are turning, colored for a season, lemon, golden, vermilion, rose. Petals of honesty, tears at the heart of things will yet pass, and this world's glory will return with the year. Though my trees are ephemeral in this October light. This is Josephine Zell for Mind's Eye Radio.
Thank you.
Environmentalists are often disparaged as being teeny-wearing tree huggers. But Fran Rawl takes the phrase literally and explores its woody center in the following poem.
The Tree Hugger. At the dinner table, my child said she had an assignment. Describe a relationship you've had with a tree. What? Then I remembered the California experience with an English walnut tree. In my aunt's backyard, we swung from the thick white limbs, always with our best Tarzan yells. And the elderberry tree in our yard, too fragile for climbing, but great to play tea party under, eating the mild berries. Have you hugged a tree lately? The dead giant looming over you, still strong, still forked, scragged limbs, moss-covered like a dead Persephone. Press your cheek against the scaly bark. It's like a totem pole, life inside waiting to emerge. Dead is relative. Green leaves are so ephemeral. Ear to trunk, you hear the roar of the elements like a child with a big seashell. If you press hard enough, you may enter into that strong-celled world. This is Fran Rawl, still waiting for the echo from Mind's Eye Radio.
A Hillside Thaw by Robert Frost. To think to know the country and not know the hillside on the day the sun lets go, 10 million silver lizards out of snow. As often as I've seen it done before, I can't pretend to tell the way it's done. It looks as if some magic of the sun lifted the rug that bred them on the floor, and the light breaking on them made them run. But if I thought to stop the wet stampede, and caught one silver lizard by the tail, and put my foot on one without avail, and threw myself wet-elbowed and wet-kneed, in front of 20 others, wriggling speed, in the confusion of them all a glitter, and the birds that joined in the excited fun, by doubling and redoubling song and twitter, I have no doubt I'd end by holding none. It takes the moon for this. The sun's a wizard by all I tell. But so's the moon, a witch. From the high west she makes a gentle cast, and suddenly, without a jerk or twitch, she has her spell on every single lizard. I fancied when I looked at 6 o'clock, the swarm still ran and scuttled just as fast. The moon was waiting for her chill effect. I looked at 9. The swarm was turned to rock, in every lifelike posture of the swarm, transfixed on mountain slopes, almost erect. Across each other and side by side they lay. The spell that so could hold them as they were was wrought through trees without a breath of storm to make a leaf, if there had been one, stir. It was the moon's. She held them until day, one lizard at the end of every ray, the thought of my attempting such a stay. A Hillside Thaw by Robert Frost.
Thank you.
Children make decisions by playing paper, rock, scissors. Bridget Birdsall celebrates other elements in the following poem, Earth, Mineral, Metal, Water, Wood, an elemental lament.
Listen, the days slip by like a river. The winds of time have shifted, changed you, so that now every face you see, you love. Every heart you hear, you want to reach out and touch. God bless the old ones who sit at the water's edge, their skin wet and wrinkled with time. God bless the children wading naked in the dirt-brown, murky mud, their cries of surprise and delight with the chill of the water. God bless the young men who act as if they are not looking. Their chiseled bodies and sunglasses do not miss a thing. God bless the young women stretched out in the sand, their fertile souls shining. God bless the water and the air, the earth and the sun. Never has there been such a day as this, and yet always it has been, only before you were not listening.
Periodically speaking, periodically someone stumbles onto artifacts that startle. In yesterday's papers, one can read that someone thinks he has discovered the ossuary box, the bone box, of not only Mary Magdalene, but of Jesus and a possible son of two of them. Birdsall pays attention to other competing archaeological finds.
Ape girl, could it be that this discovery will put an end to the nonsense, whether it was Darwin or intelligent design, whether it was 7 days or 7 million years, whether Eve tempted Adam with an apple or a damn banana. More importantly, more relevantly, what is the origin, not of this universe, but of this guilt, of this shame, inordinately misplaced all these hundreds of years onto the bodies of women of all ages of countless generations. And now, what do we do with this little ape girl who played in the syringa trees with her long, long arms, whose ear bones mimic those of a chimpanzee, more ape than human? And what would she hear if we could speak to her today? Only the wind, the birds, the lapping of the water? I fear that all this noise about our origins keeps us forever lost in translation. This is Bridget Birdsall for Mind's Eye Radio. It's easy to have winters of discontent in frozen climes. Who's not dreamed of escape to the beach? Here's poet Guy Thorvaldsen with Amphibious Conception.
That year we blamed our marital troubles on the boorish Wisconsin spring. After all, it was an easy target, the bitter winds and raw carnage, a perfect camouflage to hide the sins of my depression, her malaise, our winter. So we escaped, a retreat to the east, a solemn push, perhaps to rush the sun, landing us on the muscular forearm of the Cape Cod spit. We camped out of the wind, an inland terrain of soft sand hills, the site encircled by propagating pines, each lilting limb breathing out a fine mist of yellow pollen, dusting our tent, our words, and a nearby pothole of a pond. There, in the shallows, hundreds, thousands, legions of chubby tadpoles danced. Green ballerinas perched on wriggling tails, pursed lips breaking the spore-laden surface, plip, plip, plip. It was a greedy gulping, a consuming, gluttonous race, to extricate by inward force stroking arms and leaping legs. And all day long across the pond a great grandfather frog bellowed, "Barop, barop, barop, come home, come home, come home." That night, snug in our tent, we forgot why we came and remembered something old, sliding against each other, dreaming of bulbous pollywogs rising, pirouetting, sucking pollen, sprouting limbs and life. In the morning, a foghorn bellowed from the nearby bay, and though we did not notice then, our eastern journey had spurned an answer for two concupiscible pilgrims. We had run away and raced the sun, and, for a time, had won something, silent and mud-deep, wriggling, perhaps giggling, warmly within our uncertain womb. This is Guy Thorvaldsen for Mind's Eye Radio.
Scientists muck it up for all of us naturophiles with their endless litany of facts. Always ripping the covers off of what we may choose to see is a big featherbed of serenity and peace. But while some things may seem impenetrable, inviolable in nature, few things are, as Norma Gay Pruitt discovers in 35.
35. Some scientists predict that the summer polar ice caps could vanish in 35 years, intones the radio. The first words I hear and the message that will shape my day. Summer polar ice caps sounds like a contradiction, but I know it's not. 35, the age I was when I last fell in love, when seeing other people's babies made me cry for want in restaurants, when I could not surmise that within 4 years I would have my own. 35, the age my mother was when she birthed her sixth of seven. The age I was when we had marched the war in Vietnam to an end. 35 years ago, I had just voted for the very first time, and it seems so recent. So close by, like this pearly fog that entombs my car as I drive 35 miles an hour, these 35 miles to work. In the night, the fog of war, of global warming, of memory, has crept up to my windows as the Carnival cruise ship nudged up to our hotel window during the night at Key West some 35 years ago. The yellow fog that rubs its back upon the window panes, to quote T.S. This is the fog that forces me to drive this dirty white car, obliterating the truth that calves daily the beautiful and dreadful icebergs, 9/10 under our consciousness. This is Norma G. Pruitt, and I am out of here and underwater. Glub.
Think you've heard it all now? Well, not by a mile, since we've other listeners in the snow and ice and sunshine, morning and night, even those acquainted with the night, and miles to go with the Mind's Eye radio show. In the second half today, we'll really hear the nature of things when one poet gets up early to hear the bird song another poet celebrates. We'll even take a trip to sunny Boca Raton. So, shh, we're listening to nature today. Hearing is passive, something we can't help but do, as in overhearing cell phone clatter. But listening is active, as in active meditation, which sounds like an oxymoron, but which one poet, Paul Thompson, explains is not.
Meditation. Close your eyes. Relax your neck. Let your head loll loosely on its vertebrae. 2 million years to get it there on top. Enjoy. Inhale. Exhale. Doesn't it feel good to sit behind the curtain of your lids and listen to my words roll in as steady as the sea? Inhale. Exhale. Relax the shoulders, now the arms. Slump a bit. Nobody minds. It feels good to sit behind the curtain of the eyelids. Inhale. Exhale. Don't hold your breath, but let it flow in and out, easy as a gentle wind among the leaves of willow trees. The necks relax, shoulders droop, your torso slumps, and legs forget what legs do. Inhale. Exhale. Gently now. It feels good. Sit behind the curtain of the eyelids and hear my words roll in like waves upon a distant shore. Heavy head, heavy hands. Inhale, exhale. Quiet as a bird within your nest, safe behind the curtain of your heavy lids, it feels good to hear the words. And now it's time. Time to descend the stair, step by step by step. Take your time. You're leaving time. The stair descends into the cleft. Steps of rock, scents of water, limestone, air cool and fresh as leaves, as moss, down the ancient steps of stone, you alone. You try to count the steps, but what do numbers mean when time is gone? One and two. Inhale, exhale, down the ancient steps of stone. Green the light from branches overhead. Dim the stair, but green the light, and then the steps are gone. You stand beside a narrow, purling brook where minnows dart like thoughts among the stones. And on that mossy bank you find your parents' old couch, on which you clambered a lifetime ago. And heaviness descends like evening, and you lie upon that old couch with its old musty scent of memories. Your body sinks into memories, people and rooms, voices, music, sunlight and dark, heavy as stone sinking into sea, into green sea. You curl there upon that couch, dreaming of past years, dreaming, and then you sleep, the sleep of seeds sunk within the soil. You are a seed. Summer comes and autumn. Still you sleep, dreaming slow inchoate dreams as leaves fall down and then the snow drifts down. And still you sleep, curled there upon that couch of centuries. A corn kernel pushed into the earth, a nut buried by a squirrel covered with snow. Rumors of spring. A cardinal's whistle. Snowmelt swells the brook, and the seed breaks open. You expand towards sun, arms and face lifted to light. Taller and taller you grow, reaching toward sun, the bright lantern of day, toward moon, soft lamp of night, the candles of star, star, star. Your arms become branches, your fingers leaves, your feet roots deep within the world, higher until sun and moon and stars interlace your leaves. And there you stand, holding up the sky, and birds dwell among your branches, and the winds of eternity rustle your leaves, and your leaves sing. The radiance fades, the vision dies. Journey done, you may return, reluctantly perhaps, to ordinary things, to rooms, to people, to counted years. Inhale, exhale. Open your eyes to see the miracle of here and now. This is Paul Thompson for Mind's Eye Radio.
One takes the bad along with the good if one enters the woods beyond the city lights, or so discovers Judith Zuckerman in her Woodland Notes.
Trees sway in the breeze. She hears arpeggios, sudden rush to crescendo, fading diminuendo to no more than a rippling wave. Leaves rustling swells, repeating like a symphony's theme, resonating like strings, passing the sound to the upper branches. She hears flute, clarinet, and oboe blending. A lone bird like a piccolo trills grace notes. From deep in basses and cellos, sound surges, echoes of Sabaeus, trees in the wind. A butterfly's wings resting on clover, quiver like triplets played pianissimo by two harpists in harmony with woodwinds, masquerading as birds. Black flies, muted trumpets and French horns, chimes in the percussion ring, raucous human laughter pierces through the symphony of the woods. This is Judith Zuckerman for Mind's Eye Radio. Thank you.
An early riser, Kathy Miner, not only catches the worm, but catches the birds that catch the worms.
Last night's paper had said the sun would rise at 7:03. At bedtime, I set my alarm accordingly. Then when it buzzes, I dress in the bathroom to avoid waking anyone else, brew a single mug of coffee, find my coat, mittens, and boots, and at 6:45, slip out the back door. The darkness is already gone. By the time I get to where I can see the lake, there is a wide band of pastel pink at the horizon. I hear a cardinal, a crow, a blue jay, then, from the far shore, something that sounds like, what? What? All on one pitch, a nuthatch. And could the two-note descending chickadee call be saying, see me, here, sweetie? I know. I anthropomorphize far too much. A few soft snowflakes fall lazily as I face east and wait. Suddenly, I know exactly where the sun will be. A short vertical column of pink appears, soon replaced by an orange spark behind the bare trees. Yesterday, our volunteer work party burned brush piles in these very woods. We fed the blazes continuously, piling more and more branches against the fire's hungry heart. Eerily, I feel I am staring into those same flames this morning. As if someone has given the command, all sing, crows, cardinals, chickadees, even mallards exult in the new day. Then I hear a sound that raises the hackles on my neck. From somewhere behind me comes a rhythm, steady, low, repetitive. It does not sound like any woodpecker I have ever heard. It is as if far in the distance some being is drumming. Two-legged or four-legged, real or imaginary, I can't exactly tell, and the distinctions don't seem important. I drum back on my thighs with my gloved hands, the rhythm that the sunrise evokes. I never see the sun's full disk. It slips under a cloud's edge when still a semicircle. On signal, all noise, even the traffic on the nearby street, stops. It is so quiet I can hear the stream running. I have seen and heard enough. The sky is as before, but I am not. I head for home and breakfast. Still all ears, this is Kathy Miner for Mind's Eye Radio.
Lynn Patrick Smith slowly eliminates all sound except the essential in his poem, Confiding in Someone.
Confiding in Someone. If moonlight appears to be leaking through the cracks around your back door, do not seal them. This is where you will come when the house is silent and you need to talk. Turn off all lights. You will not want them listening in. They burn with envy and repeat what they hear. Blow out the candle in the corner, the one that snickers slyly. It is waiting to betray you. Sit as quietly as you can, without concealing anything. Recall your most innocent moment. Now you are ready. The moonlight knows when it is needed. It settles in the kitchen, ready to listen and be trusted. Now you must do the same. This is Lynn Patrick Smith for Mind's Eye Radio.
What is left to say about the sea after the Greeks, those sea-loving and sea-going folk, have said their piece? Well, plenty. Poet Esther Cameron sings the wine-dark rhythms, reminded of poets like Homer and Paul Celan, whose phrase, singable residue, shapes the title of her Pan to the Waves.
This poem was written in 1999, during or just after the visit to the Florida coast which it describes. At the time, I was working my way through Clyde Farr's book, Homeric Greek, which throws you right into the Iliad. I was struck by the feeling for the sea in that text, natural enough in the poetry of a sea-going people. My poem has an epigraph, Singable Residue, which is from a poem by Paul Celan. The Residue at Boca Raton. Two tides meet here. The line of condos, villas, hotels, resorts, that no one from Key West to probably Nova Scotia can outwalk, comes toe to toe with the Atlantic Ocean as the edge between is borne away. A 6-foot sand step bites the beach down to the waterline since the storm last winter sent waves to knock on the terrace wall beneath the pale pink tower. Upstairs in my aunt's seashell apartment, high ceilings, white walls, pink pillows, paintings, prints, not conversation pieces. They came with the place. I never look at them. Must have seemed the right sort of thing, unlike unproductive me. Poetry? That's nothing for this time. 90 years old, 20 years widowed, still slim and smart. You can't live in the past. The present is long-distance phone calls, bridge, bingo, TV. She knows about salt in the aquifers around Miami. It's the end of the world. Let's enjoy what we have. Refers stoically to her daughter, dead of cancer at 50. Shows my mother her collection of pictures, her descendants, repetitions, variations of family features, a numerous tribe but beginning to thin out in the fourth generation, like my mother's in the third. She's at her best when talking of their childhood, and my mother also brightens then. I go down to walk on the foreshore, trying to block out the buildings, but of course one can't. With me there tag along faint outlines of presences, Herlin, Stevens, Yeats. Summoned by the surf's gong, they come unwilling to the sea that gives and takes remembrance and grovels beneath our rage for violent disorder, growing sterile beside the diseased venereal soil. But Homer has no problem with all this. Adaptable, like those pelicans that when the dawn wind is stiff commute up from behind the condos, strap hanging on extended wings. The Morse code of his verse tapping in my head, like the old-time tunes my aunt hears on the radio in her sleepless nights. His scenes reenact themselves like hauntings, the two chiefs scrapping over captive women, no different from a gangster movie, really, but immortal in rhythm. And the ocean rolls its hexameters, impassively casting the shells of her dwindling children. Perhaps since the loss of the aminoids, great spiral wheels, rainbow-colored for all we know, 10 feet in diameter, chased with increasingly arcane runes of sutures, housing those plasms that sent forth their great roiling tentacles, for all we know, with the cunning of the giant squid. But no cunning availed in those years of winter, when the sky was darkened and all the plankton died. Perhaps since then it does not matter to her what she goes on giving and taking, when the sky was darkened and all the plankton died. Perhaps since then it does not matter to her what she goes on giving and taking, strewn scarves of coquina, excised brains of coral, what has formed itself in her eons and seasons with her hands' finishing touches, the internal precision screw of the conch laid bare, a shard of whelk smoothed for the bowl of a spoon, even returns our absent-minded offerings, styrofoam float, polyurethane container, reshaped into a semblance of her tokens, like a poet throwing in a scientific term. I walk along, churning words and disgruntlements. He went away by the shore of the many thundering sea. Hals atur kretos, the restless sea, Alternative reading, the Barren Sea, either works. Host to a dysfunctional prehistoric compulsion, peak experiences are not for me. Noting coldly that sunset or dawn turns sky and ocean to one pink shell, rosy-fingered. Nor can I meditate, turn off the word machine. But I ask for a perfect shell, and a minute later find a fighting conch. Its opening glistens brown-black, color of old gore, intact enough to give back the seething in the veins of my listening flesh as an echo of the many thundering sea. Leaving the shore, I turn. Thank you. After all, you can never be sure. I'm Esther Cameron from Mind's Eye Radio. The Cardinals have been singing pretty much all winter, though now they're singing more. But this morning, I heard the first mourning dove, which is really the sign that spring is on the way. So I wrote the following haiku. This morning, away, far off, and indistinct, but yes, a mourning dove.
Now the cooing notes of the familiar mourning dove in a garden near a noisy road.
Speaking of notes, it seems important to end our show on a good one. What better singers than the original choristers, channeled by Mind's Eye's own Birdman of Madison, John Morgan?
This song is for the birds. Now almost everyone agrees there's one thing that's bound to please. But this song has only one of these, 'cause this song has no bees. It's just a flighty flock of words, 'cause this song is for the birds. Here's to the birds and all their labors, even the mockingbird that mocks its neighbors. Here's to the helpful carrier pigeon. If you want to send a message, it'll pitch in. Here's to the ostrich with his head in the sand, and the prairie chicken who's a one-bird band. Here's to the resplendent scarlet tanager, and to the martin's apartment manager. The fierce falcon in the sky is a ravager, unlike the buzzard who is just a scavenger. It's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it. Here comes the chorus, and you can whistle to it. Here's the chorus without words, 'cause this song is for the birds. You hear no squawk from the high-flying hawk. They all talk of the awkward walk of the auk. Here's to the albatross around the ship's deck. Hope you don't find one around your neck. The cowbird has dirty tricks up her sleeve, and some other nest her eggs she will leave. Most unethical, wouldn't you say? Won't build her own nest the regular way. Here's to the penguin on the polar ice, unlike the bird of paradise. A bird someday I'd like to meet. Hope it's in the catbird seat. The crow is clever, though sometimes a nuisance. The blue jay always puts in his 2 cents. Here's to the swift and the snowy egret, and the stork who fills your bassinet. Hear the howl of the crazy old loon. There's the owl who hunts by the moon. Here's to the canary who works in the mine. Here's to your ducks who are all in a line. At least I hope so. I don't know about mine. The hummingbird sips at the honeysuckle vine. It hums because it doesn't know the words. The old joke goes, you've probably heard. Here's to the dodo, which is now extinct. Met up with the modern world and blinked. Here's to the sandpiper and the tern. Here's to the carrier pigeon. It made a return. Here's to the peacock that's filled with pride. Here's to the chicken that's best when it's fried. Here's to the parrot on a pirate's shoulder. There go the geese as the weather gets colder. Here's to the pheasant that brightly flashes. Here's to the phoenix that rises from its ashes. Here's to the chickadees braving the weather. Here's to the lovebirds growing old together, at least till they reach the end of their tether. Here's the chorus without words, because this song is for the birds. And this is John Morgan for Mind's Eye Radio.
Did you hear them all? Were your very senses electrified? Did you hear the nothing that is not there and the nothing that is? As one meditating cowboy said to the other, we hope to have brought you Om on the Range today. If not, as the robin will soon say, cheer up. You've made a good start on spring by simply listening to nature. That's our show. Thanks for listening to Nature, or Shush Darlings, Mother's Talking, on Mind's Eye Radio, written by the Mind's Eye Radio Collective in Madison, Wisconsin. The show was produced by Kelly Warren and co-produced by Gay Davidson-Zilski. Today's Meister Singers included Bridget Birdsall, Esther Cameron, Kathy Miner, John Morgan, Norma Gay Pruitt, Fran Rawl, Lewis Rawl, Lynn Patrick Smith, Paul Thompson, Guy Thorvaldsen, Josephine Zell, and Judith Zuckerman. You can listen online to this and past shows by going to www.radioforall.net, and that's the number four. I'm Greg Williard. Till next time, best wishes from Mind's Eye Radio.